open up the Senate Education and General Government Committee and open up a public hearing on SCR 3, the memorial to the Boz.
There'll be a few more.
Senators, this will just take a few minutes. We have a fittingly a video on this Oregonian that many of us knew from our living rooms and TV screens. It's about 4 minutes. I also knew Jim Bozzi because I worked with him for 16 years, but I also grew up with him, as I think you might have too, Senator Metzger. And I probably wouldn't have done this if he was just a TV personality, but he was very active with Oregon and charities in this community. So let's roll the tape, as we say in the business.
The funniest things I know come from viewers who with me.
Dear Jim,
every time you come on the TV, the dog starts to bark and whine. And we thought it was so cute. We had the neighbors come over, and now we don't think it's cute anymore. We start watching Channel 6.
Blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see.
Along the Northwest TV landscape, there are few names that are more recognizable than The Boz. A man who created a television legacy spanning four decades. A man who did it all just by being himself.
Since I had been 4 years old, I wanted to toot the horn on a train. See that? That just sends chills up and down my spine.
There was never a situation where I ever saw him on the air where he was either ill at ease and didn't have, you know, that total capacity to relate to the audience.
You believe that?
No.
When he came into the studio, it seemed like it warmed up and he brought light with him.
He always made me laugh. He was so funny and so spontaneous.
Jim Bozzi was born in Great Falls, Montana. After high school, he entered the University of Washington's pre-med program, but ended up taking a little detour.
I thought I'd take a year off and never went back to med school, and television seemed like a likely place to go.
He spent 4 years at KOTI-TV in Klamath Falls, Oregon.
Stand by for K2.
KTU opened up in Portland in March of 62, and I wanted to be the creative director. So I sent a resume up, and out of 360 applicants, I won. And then in 1967, the weatherman on Channel 2, a neat guy named Kirby Brumfield, went on vacation, and the program director said, "I know you did weather down at Klamath Falls. Can you sound like you know what you're doing?" So I said, "Oh, yeah."
The audience reaction was so great, the Boz jumped from the world of promotion to the world of cold fronts and forecasts.
The Big News on 2, in color at 5, with Portland's most knowledgeable news team, led by Ted Knight, anchorman, Art Ekman on sports, and Jim Bozzi with weather.
He talked about the weather the way you wanted to know about the weather. He was very sensitive to how people feel weather and how they receive his broadcast at home.
I looked at the weather as something that was serious when it was serious. I gave everybody my best. I'd lay awake nights worried about stuff. All meteorologists do that. They got the best equipment in the world, and they still give you that slight chance of sprinkles just so they're not wrong. I invented that.
In 1975, programming director Chuck Gingold tapped Jim to host another on-air production.
It's time now for AM Northwest with your host, Jim Bozzi.
He was so unique, so different than anyone else. What we refer to as a truly big personality.
It was a pleasure meeting you, my
friend.
I don't
shake hands.
That's all, folks.
And I said, "Now, there's a guy who could do a talk show."
I think he just loved sitting down and talking to people. And he has a great curiosity.
We have had a lot of authors over the years. Jim always read the books. His house, he's got this huge, huge library of books that he has saved over the years. I think he's got his, what he calls his Watergate wall.
It says Julie Nixon Eisenhower. Is that the way you sign your checks?
Yes, it is. Isn't
that
terrible?
Really?
Yes.
Is that what's on your credit card? I get up in the morning and you go on the set on AM Northwest and, you know, we'd have an audience. And there'd be 20 people, 50, 150, 200 people. And you get a standing ovation. Well, how is that at 9 o'clock in the morning to start your day?
In 2000, after 33 years of service to K2 viewers and the community, the Boz retires.
Thank you. You people out there, all of you, have been the words and the music to my song, and I thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, with Jim, what you see is what you get. His personality on the air is his personality off the air.
He's funny, he's sincere, he's irreverent.
Jim is, above all, a gentleman.
He has a magnetic force with people that is just tremendous.
Bosley, really, when you're talking television, he's done it all.
Jim is legendary. There's no question about it.
It's a very heavy word, legend. But I think if anyone, if it applies to anyone,
it would be Jim Bosley.
If viewers are lucky, there'll be somebody that'll come along that will have some of the personality and characteristics of a Jim Bosley. And there won't ever be an exact copy.
Everybody felt like they knew him, and everybody liked him.
I think that, you know, people, you know, think of Portland television, they'll think of Jim Bosley.
Jim Bosley passed away in April. I found it because of his status as a well-known Oregonian. One person, one of our market pollsters at KATU, once told me he is the most recognizable head in Oregon. Yeah. And I thought it's appropriate to recognize him. Among other things, he had the 1 to 10 rating system for weather days. And the one thing that's remarkable is you saw the weatherman status evolve during his tenure. It used to be kind of the local DJ yuck yuck guy. Now on local televisions, they're all meteorologists, much more professional. And he was the yuck yuck guy. Went to night school, got his degrees, became a meteorologist, and saw the whole business professionalize. Anyway, we could go on and on. Discussion?
Yeah, I met Jim 1977, my first year. Well, I'm dating myself before you were ever around there. Mm-hmm. And sitting with a few people that from your, I think Tom Dargan, I don't know if he had, was still there when you were there, the general manager, and Tom McCall and Jim Bosley. We were sitting at a dinner event. I think I'd been at Coyne at that time about maybe 4 months. And Jim leaned over, because he'll say his personality is so funny, he leaned over and said, because I was doing sports, and he says, wouldn't you like to have a job like mine where you could say, 30% chance the Beavers are going to win and get away with it like I do. You know? And he did. He just had a great personality. And I remember on three or four different occasions on the AM Northwest show, you know, he would, he thought it would be great if we just kind of got together because, you know, you're competitors and everything else. And we would get together, you know, from KPTV, KHW, KATU Coin, you know, the anchors, we'd all get together for a show and just kind of talk about, you know, what it's like to be competitors in the market. And it was just hilarious. And Jim would orchestrate this and, you know, really just kind of needle people and bring things out. It was a great personality and was always up. It was always a fair weather day when Jim was there. And he was just, I think, just a great, besides being, like you say, a legend in terms of Portland TV, he, like you say, his evolution of what he did, I think, for television and what was the standard was really, really top-notch.
Okay. I'll close the public hearing on SCR3 and open up a work session on SCR3.
Mr. Chair, my compliments to you for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
I move SCR3 to the floor to be adopted, to be an adopted recommendation.
Senator Morris moves SCR3 to the floor with a to be adopted recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Any objections to SCR3? Seeing none. So order. I will carry this in a little reception we'll have on the Senate floor next week. Okay. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 553. This measure is rather lengthy, and colleagues, just so you know, it is the handiwork of Representative Edwards mostly, or at least the parts you don't like. And it is. I think he built upon a study that we'll hear about, and you all have copies of on ESDs. Did you want to summarize this,
Mr. Chair? As you say, it is a bit lengthy, but I'll try and quickly give members the gist of it. It would the Department of Education would develop a statewide strategic plan for ESDs, and in other ways be kind of a central authority for ESDs. In addition, the State Board of Education could change boundaries or merge ESDs, and the Superintendent of Public Instruction would be authorized to select, remove, and set the compensation for ESD superintendents.
Okay, Representative Edwards, did you want to come up and perhaps walk us through this section by section after a statement?
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I haven't had time to finish my homework. But I do look forward to looking through this. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Representative Edwards.
Chair Haas, Vice Chair Morris, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to come before you. For the record, my name is David Edwards. I represent House District 30. Which encompasses Greater Hillsborough, North Plains, and Roy and Verbort out in Washington County. The overarching purpose of Senate Bill 355 is to improve statewide efficiency in education. The concept, as the chair mentioned just a moment ago, is based primarily on a report by the independent Gibson Consulting Group, which was in response to House Bill 3184 passed in the 2005 session. The Gibson Consulting Group conducted a study of education service districts, or ESDs, and their impact on the efficiency in Oregon public education. The bill is intended to implement many of the group's recommendations, along with some complementary measures. Currently, there is no statewide governance structure for ESDs other than their reporting requirements to the state. Under this structure, whereby the Oregon Department of Education, or ODE, has no direct authority to approve spending, influence services, or participate in the appointment of the ESD superintendent, I believe the state is unable to hold ESDs to a reasonable level of accountability. Therefore, this bill is designed to require ODE to create a statewide strategic plan for ESDs, and at the same time give the agency additional approval authority in a variety of areas. And rather than run through the bill section by section, I'll just quickly detail some of the components of the bill. Basically, it would give ODE final authority on all ESD service delivery to maximize statewide effectiveness and efficiency, and that would include eliminating the school district voting requirement for ESD local service plans in Section 334.175 of the current statute. It would expand ODE's authority in terms of ESD planning. As I mentioned before, the primary purpose of the bill is to ensure a statewide strategic plan is developed, and this plan would address a number of areas. The best role for ESDs in public education over the next 20 years, the specific programs or services ESDs should provide to improve student achievement and efficiency in public education, the appropriate ESD program or service pricing, ways to minimize duplication of effort between ESDs and school districts. It would address statutory and regulatory constraints, if any, that inhibit ESDs from achieving their collective mission. And as part of the plan, ODE would also create an efficiency measurement system for ESDs. In addition, the bill would give ODE authority to compel school districts to use ESDs for particular services where economies of scale offer some kind of systemic savings. Those services would include, but would not be limited to, human resources such as recruiting, applicant screening, new termination or changes, processing, background checks, substitute calling system, risk management, contact management, substitutes management, and various business services such as budget reporting, purchasing, Medicaid billing, and grant management. And finally, transportation such as bus driver training and certification and bus route planning. In each case, the bill would allow ODE to determine if it's appropriate to include an opt-out provision for local school districts? And if so, the criteria for determining which districts qualify to opt out. It would also give ODE authority to establish the criteria for siting and continuing ESDs, including the minimum service capacity, and the power to convert existing ESDs not meeting the requirements into satellite offices of other ESDs, or alternately merge them with others, reducing facility and other fixed costs. A few more items. It would also give ODE authority to establish statewide purchasing co-ops by assigning one ESD within the system responsibility for particular purchasing categories, including but not limited to food service, computer equipment, and general services and supplies. It would also give the ESD, the ODE, approval over superintendent hiring and firing. And finally, it would give the ODE authority over ESD annual budgets, including the ability to reallocate funds to best meet statewide objectives. So with that, I'll close this by saying that, you know, especially in these dire economic circumstances, I think it's imperative that we ensure our taxpayer dollars are put to their best use, and I think charging ODE to create the statewide plan for ESDs would go some way towards affecting that goal.
Thank you, Representative. Obviously, this vests a great deal more power into the superintendent.
It certainly does.
And obviously, then there would be additional fiscal costs for the state, but this bill and your belief is that it would far be outweighed by the savings and ESDs. Can you speak to that?
Sure. Mr. Chair, committee, I do believe that overall the state could accrue substantial cost savings. As you know, we won't get that kind of estimate until it passes is near passing out of committee, if that's the will of this committee. But not only do I think it will save the state money in terms of facilities and fixed costs, and if the recommendations for allowing ODE to select ESDs for particular kind of co-op purchasing arrangements save school districts in the long run, it will also improve services. I think the understanding is that if ODE has the authority to potentially close, merge, or alternately convert some ESDs to satellite offices of others, there is the potential to not only extend the range of services provided to districts serviced now by underperforming ESDs, but also to improve the quality of those services.
One of these sections here looks at sort of acting as the contractor for school districts and other educational ESDs. Is that part of the Gibson study?
Which section, Mr. Chair?
The one, well, you bulleted provide entrepreneurial services under specific service circumstances.
Mm-hmm. That was part of the, Mr. Chair, yep. Committee members, that was part of the recommendations from the consulting group.
Right. Any other questions? Senator Morris?
Thank you. And thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. I guess the fundamental issue is how do you achieve reform when you have a lot of vested interest? And the concern that I have in the drafting is it invests a tremendous amount of authority in the superintendent and the Department of Education. And you know, that's one major issue. The other issue is if we go down that path, it would seem to me that the superintendent should not be in a position of unilateral actions, but should be recommending and then ratified by the Board of Education, as opposed to strictly an administrative function within the department. I think it provides a little better checks and balances, but it's pretty sweeping.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, I'm certainly open to entertaining optional alternative governance structures. I think the most important facet of this proposal is to ensure there is indeed a statewide strategic plan for the ESDs and that there is sufficient authority invested in either a single entity or a combination of entities for that check and balances to ensure that that plan can be carried out.
Questions?
I have a question.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward for discussion. And what I meant by my comment is I wish I had time to read this report today, and I do plan on reading it because I think it'll give us a lot of background that led to this proposal. I had never heard of education service districts until I moved to Oregon, and that could be because when I moved to Oregon was when I became a parent. But do you know if this is a structure that's common in other jurisdictions? And if so, how is oversight provided in other areas where there are analogous entities to ESDs?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, in the report, there is mention of other state best practices. And so in reading the report, you'll understand that there are alternate governance structures. The independent consulting group's recommendations are based in part on their experience in other states.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative Edwards, for your work on this. And I don't know if you can stand by or not, but we have some other witnesses.
Sure.
Ozzie Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. I represent the ESD Association, and I live in Salem. The intent of the bill, increased effectiveness and cost savings within the public school system, is appropriate, especially in this environment. We have concern about the proposed response to that intent. Converting the ESDs into regional offices of the State Department of Education and shifting control of local school district programs and services to the state is not the best response to the concerns about efficiency and cost cutting. Section 2 of the bill asks that we develop a statewide vision of the role of ESDs. Is a good idea, but most of the context suggested in the rest of ESD is in part or in whole underway as a result of what you did with Hospital 3184 in 2005. Programs and services that ESDs provide are determined by the districts served. And by the way, the smallest number of districts served by an ESD is 4, and the largest is 21. How well ESDs do this is part of an annual evaluation that is submitted to ODE. Why would you want the state, rather than a component of school districts, to determine the services to be provided by the ESD at the appropriate price for each ESD, or for each service with the group it's working with? The issue of trying to get the State Department staff so they can determine for 200 different school districts what are the appropriate services and what are the appropriate prices, I think, is problematic. Section 3, the Department of Education may require school districts to purchase or construct certain operation services through their ESD. Part of what we did in 3184, and we can probably do a much better job. You have some tension between the ESD doesn't really have the authority to make local districts buy the services, so they have to respond to what the districts want, and there is room for improvement in this area. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Current examples, though, of things that are going on, the data warehouses, which is a term for the student information systems. There are 6 of them in the state now. 2 of them are ESDs, and there are 4 local districts. Willamette ESD is the largest warehouse. It currently has written contracts with 70 school districts and 60 more in various stages of reaching its contract, in part because of the amount of money available. Lynn Benton Lincoln ESD serves all of the districts in those three counties. Hillsboro has its own warehouse and are currently in conversations with the Northwest CID to provide that service throughout their Northwest section, which is the four Northwest counties. Portland has its own data warehouse but serves all the districts in Multnomah County. Beaverton and Eugene each have their own and do not serve other people. So a data warehouse is one example of what ought to be going on and is going on. Another, Senate Bill 1149, that's the public service fees charged on power dedicated to energy conversation activities. Willamette ESD manages projects in 85 school districts across the state. Purchasing co-ops. Multnomah ESD has a purchasing co-op, has had it for 40 plus years, has over 170 members. Not all of them are school districts. Some of them are city and county units, but they're all across the state. Legal services. Since 3184 was passed in 2005, High Desert ESD, that's the Deschutes Crook County ESD, they've, through the request of their districts, the resolution process, have hired and have a staff of three attorneys on staff to serve all the districts in collective bargaining, personnel, et cetera. There are four school districts in Desert, High Desert, but there are 13 school districts who subscribe to this service. It's estimated that this service in the Deschutes Crook County saved $250,000 a year. That's about $6-7 a kid to them. Nursing services, Multnomah ESD handles all of the school nurses for the entire county, all the districts in the county. Payroll, accounting, and business services. This is one we talk most often about, and I think legitimately so. I don't think any district of any size ought not have someone involved in the business side of their operation. The superintendent of Beaverton needs a assistant superintendent for budget or business or something. But the functions that go on in the business process, I do think the computer has made that very, very clear. We ought to be looking at that. Currently, Umatilla Morrow does business services for most of the schools in their county. Northwest ESD provides those services, I think, for three districts. And Lane County provides it for most of the smaller districts in their district, or their county, their East Everett. My own view, that generally the argument is from larger districts, we can do it better ourselves. We don't. And I understand why people don't want to give up things that they're doing, it's done their way, et cetera. But if there's one area where there ought to be some ability to do this, the computer has turned processing of information into can be done for a lot of people and quickly in one spot. So I think that's an area we haven't done as well as we should. But in Section 3 of the bill, I think in your bill, as a result of House Bill 3184 in 2005, the ESDs must file a report with the Department of Education showing what they've done in the area of finding efficiencies, and Senator Cruz was involved in this, and what they've done to find it and how much involvement is, et cetera. Those reports, I believe, are filed. But I think that's an area that would be more fruitful for you to get involved in. The statute tells us what we ought to be doing. The mix between local district opinion and ESD needs to be hammered a little bit. Section 4 gives the board authority to, the state board authority to merge ESDs. This issue has been before this body at least four times during the past 40 years. In the late 1960s, the ESD Association brought to the legislature a proposal to reduce, they had 29 in those days, to reduce from 29 to 15. The bill was introduced by the association. And then every legislator and every person from one of the ESDs that wouldn't be there started raising cane, and that bill did not go anywhere. In the early 90s, we did reduce from 29 to 21 and set in process a voluntary process if you wanted to go beyond that. And there's only been one voluntary effort since then. Yamhill County joined Marion and Polk, and they created Willamette, or ESD. And there's very good evidence that that saved money for it. And Yamhill County gets better service at less cost. In 2000, 99 session, I shouldn't say you guys because you're not here, but this body appointed a task force to address this issue. And it came back with a recommendation that you should reduce the number of ESDs from 21 to 14, and it named which ones. That bill never passed. 3184, when it was introduced in 2005, directed the state board to merge ESDs according to a set of criteria. 3184 that passed, I went and checked the enrolled bills to be sure that wasn't in the one that passed.
Well, it was not.
And the senator was involved. By and large, the legislature has kind of punted on this issue every time it's been around. Why would you think giving permissive authority to the state board would cause anything to happen? If you think this should happen, I believe you're going to have to make it happen. Local service plans, they're currently developed and approved. By the way, they are a creature of the 3184. By the way, that Gibson report guided much of the discussion around the development of 3184. Gibson report's full of good ideas, no doubt about that. The local service plans, by current law, they must be developed and approved by the local school districts. And they're the ones who want the services. They have by the way, the reference to other states. Most states have some form of a regional agency. They're called BOICES. They're called Education Service Districts. They're called Regional Service Districts, a variety of things. One of the things we have that most other states talk about that we have is how we make decisions. And our ESDs make decisions on the basis of votes by the component school districts. And to have an affirmative vote, half of the three-fourths of the districts have to vote for an item, and they must include over half of the students. So it gives some balance between the smaller and larger districts. And you'll hear the debate about small and large, and quite often you hear Portland versus the rest of Multnomah County. Every single ESD has a large school district in their view. In that district, that large district's view. It may not be a very big district, but it's a big district in that ESD. But the balance in the decision-making process has proven successful and is looked at by other places as a good process.
As if I could just stop in that one point and ask you, that is sort of the concern, I think, raised, and I realize the legislatures and previous years have punted, to use your word, but if...
That was for Mr. Metzger.
Thank you. If one of the concerns is that there is no reason for a large school district, Portland or Salem-Keizer, to need this function of sharing special needs instructors or so forth, then why not pull the large districts out of ESDs and adjust the funding formulas and mechanisms that way? And wouldn't there be some efficiencies there? Why, I guess philosophically, the question would be, why do the large school districts of a certain size need ESDs?
Two things. And I think if you check with some larger school districts over how things are versus they were 5 years ago, Eugene, Beaverton, Hillsboro, Albany, Corvallis, I've checked all those recently, and all of them would say they are getting good services. I don't believe there's any service that's put together as a group that a large district doesn't need some of it. There are some things inside the area you mentioned for kids with disabilities that even Portland benefits from having some shared activities. The second thing is people have lost track of why one of the reasons we had regionals. And the regional agency, or ESD, has always had an equalization function. In fact, prior to around 1980, I don't know the exact date, You voted on two levies for the ESDs. You voted on an equalization levy, and the money from that levy was collected from the entire ESD and redistributed on a per-student basis to all the local school districts. And then you voted on an operational levy. When we did away with the levies and created the new ESD, the concept was to use the larger area to create equality of services across all of the districts. And it may be that Beaverton could do pretty well or as well as or whatever. But part of the issue is the services that you're talking about are for quite often for high cost things with very low census in parts of it. And you've got to find a way to make that reach every youngster. And so there's two issues. One, the other thing, now, most, I think, the large ones tell you they don't need any help with their business functions. I don't have any evidence, but I can't believe that if payroll done by four small districts is a good idea, payroll done by one district, big district, and four small ones also a good idea. We need somebody needs some evidence to do that. But the computer, if it does anything for our life besides screw it up, it ought to be able to do that kind of stuff. So I don't think that's a position that worrying about the large districts that is justified given the mission and, in fact, given some of the activities.
Well, and I don't mean to oversimplify the issue by saying that large districts don't need ESDs. Clearly, they do.
Yeah.
They have learned, though, over the years because of this system to make it work. And I'm not even passing judgment on how it works.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I've had conversations with several superintendents of large districts, and they know that to a degree the large districts are subsidizing the small districts to make sure that those specialized services get everywhere. They know that, and for the most part they're willing to accept that because it's serving kids. And talk to Jerry and see what he says about that, and I think you'll find that he will agree with that. So,
and may I add one thing to that? The other part is that if you get to talk to a Washington County district 20 years ago, the three or four big ones would have said nothing positive about. And back in those days, ESDs could run their own, had to run their own levies. The Washington County ESD, that was just one ESD then because the others had their own. In Washington County, the ESD quit running levies because they had to be approved in all districts and the larger districts would vote it down. And one of the problems you had when you put the four to five counties together up there, you had to use the lowest rate of all of the existing ESDs, and all of those smaller counties had larger rates but raised less money, and they had to all roll back down to what the Washington County one had. But it was because of the kind of service, the things that the ESD did. Now, over in Clackamas County, the ESD had got into really doing a lot of special ed stuff for all their districts, and they were supported by all other districts. They ran a statewide levy a countywide levy for that purpose, and they had the support of Lake Oswego, Oregon City, Mooloolah, everybody, because of what it did for them. See, they come out of a different set of backgrounds. But today, the issue is, today, what's the best way to help districts do the things they're supposed to do for all kids? And the intent of this is really, really good. You ought to address some of it, I think. In fact, I end with telling you, go look, I think it's on page 3. Somebody needs to get on that report idea and be sure it's done and done well, and somebody does something with the reports. A couple other small things. Section 6, 6 and 7, given the district the authority to, the state authority to override local service plans, to move the budget around, to hire your CEO. Why would you want to, what are you doing with about 100, 150 locally elected school board people? They were elected to do this stuff. And now you would decide, well, you can do it, except you can't control the budget, you can't control your work plan, you can't hire your own CEO. And you also put your CEO in a position of hired to work with the board, but responsible to another authority. The conflict in the governance there is rather apparent. And the issue, if you, again, back, what do you want, what does a board exist for? And would you run for a board in which you couldn't control the budget, you couldn't control the work, and you couldn't hire your own CEO? Why would you spend three nights a month worrying about that? I'm closed with the intent of the bill is very, very important and valid. The issue is not getting the state to control some of this stuff. It is getting the local districts and the ESDs to do what's already on the books and getting the state to do the evaluation. Part of that, the local service plan's required to go to the state and be evaluated. And that's your hammer to be sure something happens out of this. Okay. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Morse?
Thank you. Thank you, Ozzie, for your testimony. When you were describing the various ESDs and the things that they did and the tentacles that reached out and serviced to different things, different other entities, has that ever been mapped?
Yes, sir. There's a report.
Is it in the report that we have here?
I thought I brought it. Yeah, here's a report done in 2007 asking them for what they do and what are their approximate savings, et cetera. And,
is that the Annenberg report?
No. This is a report done in 2000. The Annenberg report was done before the 205 session.
Mm-hmm.
This was done by the ESDs. Well, they hired somebody to do it, excuse me. And it goes through each ESD, what it's doing on a joint or basis or and what it costs and what it saves for their people that they're serving. I'm trying to find the summary. It has some. I'm sorry, I can't find it. There was one page. It just. Oh, here it is. Documented savings and efficiency. There were 7 different special needs student services, 12 different technology services, 5 school improvement services, and 15 administrative support services. And totally, they saved $15 million across the 8 or 10, or I don't know how many are in here, ESDs. And that needs to be expanded on, pushed. And I've only been involved in working with them for as a group for the last 4 years, I guess, 5 years. And I have, before that, I represented a larger group of them. And I've pressed the ESD soups. You need to press local school districts into, we can do some of this stuff better and more efficiently. But it's a tough, there's some local districts push back in some arenas until they demonstrate that it can be done. And we need to help on that issue.
There's a follow-up.
Yes.
How would you do it, Ozzie?
You guys may do it with your budget balancing this year. You may do a lot of it. But seriously, the reports that are supposed to go to the state from the local service plan outline what's being done. And somebody, Umatilla Morrow, they're doing a lot of the business function. Northwest, they're doing the business function. Why isn't anybody else? Why aren't they looking at it? There's data there to show them that it might work. The Multnomah ESD's co-op thing is all over the state, lots of Eastern Oregon. And maybe we only need one co-op for the whole state, but maybe somebody else ought to get in that business. Willamette ESD, their stuff where they got going with the energy conservation, the money goes from 1149 to the local districts and our ESDs, but they all can't do the work, so they've got a staff they put together to go out and help get these projects done. And so there are examples, but no, we need people to start paying attention to them, and that is a role the state ought to play. I don't disagree with that.
Have you read this Gibson report?
Prior to 2005.
Pardon?
Prior to 2005. I haven't read it since then.
Oh. One of the findings is that it says, quoting, many teachers and school district personnel are not aware of ESD services and programs, and others have perceptions of what ESDs do. And you pointed out that there's quite a few people who work in the schools who don't know what the ESD does, including administrative personnel. So how do you square up with that?
Well, it's a fact. If it does, if you're not getting a service or it's not touching you, you probably don't know much about it. I think that's aimed mostly at teachers and principals. And in districts that work, getting a direct service, they don't know much about it. Now, I think that since 2005, that problem has diminished because there's been a concerted effort again to make the districts plan what the ESDs are going to do and then work out the money part together. And I think that it's better than what it was then. But that was a fact then. That is absolutely a fact.
Okay.
Just, you know, if you're a classroom teacher and you're teaching a third grade and you got everything you need and you teach your third grade, you don't have a reason probably to know what they're doing.
Okay. Thank you, Ozzie.
Thank you.
Chuck Bennett. And Tricia Yates.
What?
Let's call it a classical squeeze.
Yeah, we're not letting
it's the rose between two thorns.
He's escaping. Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. It's, as usual, following Ozzie. He's encyclopedic in his knowledge of these issues and has covered, I think, a substantial part of the factual information. I guess just a sort of some thoughts on this to kind of add to what Ozzie, I think, had to say. There was substantial response to the Gibson report when it was completed. It was, and I think Ozzie described the kind of evolution that follows a report like the Gibson report, like the Annenberg report, and then he mentioned the reports. I'm thinking in the 8 years, 9 years that I've been involved in education lobbying, I think of about four reports that have come through talking about ESDs, I think in part because each legislative session begins the process of looking at this and saying, now, what are these guys? Who are these guys? And what exactly do they do? And what do they contribute to the education of children, to student achievement, to all of the functions that we hold in common and the expectations we hold in common? And I'm here on behalf of school administrators in the state, and I will certainly disclose that part of our administrative cadre includes administrators at ESDs, that there is a high value placed on ESD services at the local level. Certainly, I can call around and I can find among the membership of our organization, some 2,000 of them, those who've never heard of ESDs. Those who aren't quite sure what the ESD is, they aren't sure if it isn't sort of like Costco, you know, where you go do a buying club of some kind. But at the level and at each point where the services are demanded for the teaching of children, the improvement of a child's lot, whether it be in special education or reading or other kinds of learning, they know what the ESD does and value the services. Ozzie mentioned the equalization function that they play in terms of providing equality of opportunity, equality of education. I hope that is not underestimated. That is a mission and one that is extremely important. You'll hear at various times from large districts about small districts and their support for various kinds of initiatives that relate to small districts. At the core of that is the relationship that develops among these districts at the ESD. And I think that kind of brings us to what are the core problems with this bill or this approach. And that is removing this function from this governance structure that relies so heavily on district input, on development of a mission, of how to achieve that mission, how funds will be spent at the local level, involving the local school boards in a kind of representative assembly based the way Ozzie described it, and an option proposed in this bill, and there are many options that we could probably come up with that would turn this over then to a centralized administration in Salem under political leadership of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, and whether that is the best model, or under the Board of Education. So far, it doesn't appear that well, let's just take the example of consolidation. The State Board has direct control over two schools that they have tried to consolidate for session after session after session, the State School for the Blind and Deaf. And that has not occurred. And I think Ozzie's description of the discussion of consolidation over time of ESDs is a similar kind of function. This is a very difficult thing to kind of make happen. These kinds of opportunities occur as part of a function of experience out in the field, and they do occur. And the example, I think, is Yamhill joining Willamette ESD. I'm trying to recall, because I haven't read the report like Ozzie since 2005. I recall substantial criticism of the report. Problem is trying to remember on the fly what that criticism looked like. I hope if you decide to advance the bill, you would hear from a large number of local districts and ESDs to discuss it. But in thinking back on the discussions that were occurring, particularly with the department and among ESDs, it really was a different vision of what ESDs are. They become, in this model, really a satellite of a centralized education system out of Salem. They stop being sort of bottom-up controlled, and it's a top-down description. Not that there aren't efficiencies. I mean, that's the part that makes you uncomfortable when you talk about a bill like this, is that it would sound like we're so hidebound we can't discuss efficiencies, and that's really not the case. And I think that bills like this cause us all to sort of stop for a minute and think about the kinds of issues that we would want to talk about. I hope this isn't the direction you go, and that this is not the kind of education system that we would expect to have. But I do hope that some of the proposals in here become part of any further discussion of ESDs. I think the values expressed in here of efficiency, of clarity of purpose, and all the rest of it are just the kind of sort of mission statements we ought to all keep in front of us. And I think this bill, again, puts that right back in our faces. Are we doing the very best job we can at the local level? We like to think so. Again, our mission is educating kids, providing these many, many services that we provide, and we certainly are never going to ever tell you we found the right answer. And I don't think any session of the legislature won't come together and some committee at some future date, 50 years from now, won't be talking about a better structure or a change in structure. And we'll, the next generation of Chuck Bennett's will be telling you that's dandy, too. So we'll be looking forward
to
it.
When they do, Ozzie will come up and...
Well, Ozzie will be here. The rest of us will be gone, but Ozzie lives on. So anyway, thank you very much for hearing this bill and giving us a chance to comment on it.
Tricia.
Thank you, Chairman Hass and members. I'm Tricia Yates. I'm with the Oregon School Boards Association, and we represent the 1,400 volunteer elected board leaders in school districts, community colleges, and ed service districts in the state. Appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I want to just start off by expressing the greatest respect for the author of this bill. We're also about responsiveness and efficiencies and accountability. We co-serve with Representative Edwards on an accountability work group of stakeholders, and so we appreciate the opportunity and the vehicle that's brought us here to talk about those things. Ordinarily, when I come to you, I'd like to be able to bring members from the districts to talk about content in an important bill like this. Given the timeline, we weren't able to do this, so I apologize for that. But in the time that we did have, I tried to make some calls and talk to folks, and I wanted to share with you a little bit of reaction. And as Chuck said, should you decide to go farther, we'd love to bring people in to chat about some of the issues that have been raised today. And by the way, if Ozzie's encyclopedic, so is Chuck. Like Senator Bonamici, I have some homework to do. The Gibson Report preceded my tenure, so I promise to get back to that. We also believe that looking at responsiveness and efficiency in terms of a report would be a fine idea. Happy to look at those things. But in terms of some concerns, I talked to one of my favorite business managers in Albany the other day and just asked his reaction about some of the aspects of the bill given the time that we had. When you look at things like purchasing, that seems to kind of make some good sense as something that ed service districts could do. And this individual shared some interesting perspectives I'd offer to you. For example, one aspect is requiring this before the ODE study might seem like putting the cart before the horse. The sequencing would be a little bit off. And he also made me aware that ESDs now purchase off existing DAS contracts, that there are plenty of existing contracts that provide efficiencies and scale for them. There's big co-ops like those offered by Salem Kaiser. This individual didn't feel that there would be a benefit in ODE playing a role there, that there are efficiencies going on now. And you wouldn't have to take his word for it. I think if there were an opportunity, you could talk about districts like Salem Kaiser, who apparently have some good efficiencies and scale in what they do. Much has been said about the local service plan in Section 6 of the bill. We certainly think from a local governance perspective that it's important to keep districts involved in that, the planning aspect of the local service plan. This bill does feel a little state-heavy to us in terms of governance in a number of ways. I know that our members would need some convincing to believe that the state superintendent ought to hire the superintendents of the ESDs. They think that it's a good idea to keep that local and to have their own governance structure in terms of setting compensation as well. We'd have to hear some more evidence about the desirability of stripping local control in favor of that state entity. Doesn't seem to make sense. And actually, when Chuck talks about the reaction from districts, I can tell you that one thing OSBA does every fall is to go around in 17 regions. We talked about the proposal dealing with the pilot system and asking folks what they thought. And generally, the reaction is districts are getting good service from the ed service districts. We didn't hear a lot of discontent. A lot of folks in that system wanted to let the current structure rest as it is. So when you ask about district reaction on services, it's pretty good, as Chuck mentioned. Again, you may wish to offer an opportunity where you can hear more. So we've talked about governance, purchasing. Overall, again, we're happy to talk with you about efficiencies and to look further at this, commend the idea behind the bill, but some of the governance issues and assumptions in the bill are problematic for us.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Senator Morris?
Again, if I might ask you the question I asked Ozzie, Mr. Chair, and that was, what would you do? How would you do it? Because as Ozzie was describing the functions of these 20 ESDs?
Yes.
Some are reaching out, providing service here. They're jumping down here. And if I was acquiring this enterprise, I would say this is the right one to acquire. I could make a lot of improvements. I mean, just looking at this as a business enterprise, you know, how do you bring all these processes into a more aligned structure so that you're not overlapping and you're really gaining efficiencies? But how would you do that?
Mr. Chairman, one of the, as you go through the bill and take a look at it, it mentions the kind of entrepreneurial spirit that has been invested in this particular aspect of education. Previous legislatures looked at it and said, what we'd like you to do is compete and compete aggressively. And I think part of what you're seeing is as ESDs develop, and they continue to develop and change in their direction, various core services are being centralized in certain ESDs. And I think we are looking at an evolutionary situation. And I think that if it were up to me, there are earlier studies that I do think look at consolidation that do offer some models for ways you could deal with this. The difficulty is political. These are very difficult political decisions to go through these issues. You could punt to the state board and say, you'll do it. I just suggest to you, they haven't been able to consolidate two schools in Salem serving a very similar mission. So I'm not sure that's the right model. That's all I mean by that. And I'm not trying to be critical of them at all, but that's the difficulty with consolidation. I'm not sure we're not on the right track. What we're getting are the services that local district asked for, a highly competitive service delivery system that is able, through the computer and other kinds of telecommunications, to reach out in a statewide, and in some cases, they actually go beyond the borders of the state and have been criticized for some of the services they provide beyond the borders of the state in some aspects of ESD activity. And that you find in those two models, perhaps, you know, solutions are going to come. I mean, there are ESDs out there right now that probably shouldn't, well, not probably, they shouldn't be there, but there are reasons right now that they can't quite get to a consolidated resolution. And we could help you with that. I mean, we could help you with how do you deal with a situation where an ESD has a substantial debt and nobody, they're kind of poison pills. Nobody wants them right now. How do you fix that so that another ESD can absorb their service and deliver it? You know, how do you do that kind of stuff? And we could sit down and go over this kind of thing with you, but I think you'd find it to be a case-by-case basis. I think we're on the way. I think we're resolving things over time.
If I might add, Senator Morris, I think the flip side of that we'd love to engage in a conversation with you about is how we promote best practices. And I'm thinking of one, for example, that we promoted at our convention involving Northwest Regional ESD. They came in and made a presentation on using data to improve student achievement. It's a project in that ESD. Down to a superintendent, every district within that ESD came in and talked about it and just lauded the project for the great things it had done in that region to promote student achievement. And so we're trying to also, on the flip side, promote those best practices through opportunities we have, and that should be an equal part of the equation, I think, that we should talk about, and we're working and would love to talk more about ways to do that.
And I guess the other thing I just want to mention that do recall these aren't, and I worry a little when I talk about them entrepreneurially, but these are not businesses. These are service delivery systems, government service delivery systems that are equalizing opportunity in parts of the state. I think particularly of like North Central, kind of the frontier network that are providing services that I'm not sure you'd want to have that centralized in Hillsboro. You know, that you'd have one ESD providing all of those kind of services, but that you would prefer to have this kind of localized network of ESDs as well as school districts providing those kinds of services. So, you know, there are going to be built into the size of our state, the way the population is spread, there are going to be a certain level of inefficiency built into the way this thing is done. So, I think it's providing the kind of service and equalization of opportunity in education that we're trying to deliver in the most difficult and remote parts of the state. I mean, I think we're meeting a whole bunch of needs here, and I think that's part of what we need to sit down and look at is how does all that fit together? Maybe do another study. That's what we need.
One thing we,
I hope you'll dodge
Rivers
that.
Is done with that.
All right. Well, thank you both.
Thank you.
Mary Botkin.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State County Municipal Employees, and I'm here today representing our local 1995 at MESD. I'm going to say at the very beginning of my testimony, and I will say it at the end, I am a fan of ESDs. The middle of my statement will not lead you to believe that to be true. This will be the first session our union has ever come into this body and been critical of the ESD system. Never before have we ever done anything except try to assist in their budgeting and increase their funding capacity. This year, I come before you because I believe that at least one of the ESDs has lost its way. It has become murky and undefined, and we find it very disturbing that it's not clear to us any longer what their goals are. We have some of the most challenging students, the toughest, the most disrupted, the most disabled, and the most medically fragile students in the Portland School District that our members provide services to. These students come out of the mainstream classroom into an environment which is pretty protected as appropriate, and in some cases a little more rigid than where they were before. I believe that the MESDs need to exist, but they need to be refocused. And they need to be reminded about why they're there. And that they are not a standalone, no oversight body, but rather they are there to provide a service to the other school districts that they contract with. When they cease to do that, then we have to question why they're there at all. Our members do the work. They prepare the budgets. They run the business side of the business, if you will. They staff the computers. They enter the numbers, and they figure out what the bottom lines are. Yet most of our members work less than 30 hours a week. They get reduced or no benefits. And most of our classroom assistants work two jobs in order to provide for their families. And most of our members are single women with children. Last year, we were on strike for 2 weeks. I'm going to tell you, it pissed me off. It was cold. It was really cold. And for 2 weeks, I walked picket line with our members every day. And I'm going to be really honest. I'm here now because it made me angry that the board was unresponsive. They wouldn't meet with legislators who came out to meet with them. They wouldn't allow legislators to have a meaningful discussion. And they wouldn't discuss their budget in an open and meaningful manner. When the time comes, we will bring members down that can go over the budget in detail with you. And they can show you how they played, move the money around, we don't have the money, we never had the money. And yet we could show where the money was, but every time we went to identify money, it moved. And our frustration was there just wasn't any oversight. And there was nobody to go to get oversight. We believe that there should be some limits on administrative costs, that there should be oversight on their contracting practices. We will produce for you at some point a copy of the audit that was done at MESD, which criticized the very things that we have concerns about. And mostly, we are concerned about the lack of accountability. I don't know if Representative Edwards' bill is the right answer. I don't know if it gets us where we need to be. But I think it starts a discussion that is critical in this process. And that at some level, the ESDs need to be reminded what they're there for. MESD suddenly believes that it's their job to consult with school districts. I will tell you, our school districts don't need more consultants. What they need are more services to students. And if they want consultants, then they're in the wrong business. our job is to make sure students get an education, not to consult with somebody about how you contract. And that certainly is not a full-time job. Having said that, I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to say, I believe in ESDs, and I think they provide a valuable service when they're focused and directed. And if they're not focused and directed, as it was clear to us MESD was not, then either you have to focus and direct them, or we have to figure out what they're spending their money on. And we feel pretty passionately about this, and I guess I get to be the bad guy this session, because I'm not going to lobby for more money for them until I know where the money's going to go. And I urge you, do not do budget notes, please. Budget notes, as we were reminded across the bargaining table, are simply a suggestion. They don't carry the force of law, and we don't have to do anything the budget note says. So either put it in the law, make it a hard and fast rule, or don't bother talking about it, because that's what we hear when we go back, is budget notes are just a suggestion. They're not really the law.
Well, thank you, Mary. I know you have some legislation, too, that's being processed that we'll likely see here in the coming weeks. Questions, Senator Metzger?
Just a real quick one, Mary. Who did the audit of the Multnomah ESD that you're referring to?
You know, I don't... Mr. Chair,
It wasn't us.
No, it was okay. Not you.
Because my only point would be, just trying to narrow down to the specific thing you talked about, I know that our new... Secretary of State has made a point of wanting to really enhance performance auditing. Generally with school districts, they do theirs and we accept the reports, but they do have the purview of that. And one thing you might request is the Secretary of State do an audit of a performance audit. And if we need to help you with that, we can do that.
I actually believe the Secretary of State did the audit, but I have to just go back and...
Well, Chuck's moving up as if he was going to tell us something, but that's all right. I mean, you can nod. I don't need another dissertation. So that would be a good one to look at again, because, I mean, just getting back, a lot of those are budget audits. They're not performance audits.
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to say is that she has made an emphasis on performance auditing, best practices auditing. That's just another idea.
And I do want to say that some of my dearest colleagues are sitting behind me, and I'm sure they're just, like, throwing daggers at me right now.
They're preparing, but
yeah,
they haven't yet.
But there comes a time when even your dearest friends have to know that you're very cranky about the way things proceeded, and we are very cranky about the fact that MESD just seemed to have no... Nobody was in charge that we could go to get an outside opinion, and it was just very frustrating.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Representative Edwards, we're about to close. I was just wondering if rebuttal time, perhaps.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee. Hey, I'm not going to use this time necessarily to rebut any of the arguments that have been forwarded to date. I do want to say, though, that the dialogue indicates that the bill has served its purpose, which is to start a conversation about... the governance structure and mission of the ESDs. I do want to make a couple of comments based on what's been said previously. It appears there's large agreement that there can be a better way to maximize service efficiencies across the system. The question is exactly how do we do that? In terms of the governance structure, I don't want to claim that the proposal I've made is the optimal governance structure. However, the current structure has considerable flaws as well. The ESD boards are beholden to anywhere from 4 to 21 component school districts, and so they have multiple masters in that sense. Plus, they're required to issue the local service plans to the state for review. So who exactly is in charge and how exactly can they implement necessary changes? I don't know. And then lastly, there was some concern about, you know, giving ODE authority over, you know, plans to consolidate, convert, or otherwise
make changes to the ESD structure. I would just caution you against inductive reasoning. What hasn't worked in the past doesn't necessarily mean it's going to take hold in the future. I would also say that I have an interest in another bill, which I'm hopeful the committee will see shortly, which does specify a consolidation plan. So if the legislature wants to take that action, I have a vehicle to do exactly that.
Just a full service representative. Right?
Chair Cruz. Well, Representative Edwards is here, and I appreciate your interest. Just a little bit of history. In 2005, Senator Haas was the one that introduced a bill on the Senate side to carve big districts out of ESDs. And I unfortunately was rather glib in committee at that point in time and said, Madam Chair, because Senator Walker was the chair, that sounds to me like we need a task force. And so she put me in charge of it. And out of that, we have created a different governance model, which is in the pilot stages right now. It was our decision. We implemented it. I mean, it was in the bill that was passed in 2005, implemented in 2006, and it was our intent to let that get some legs under it to see how that performed relative to the others, you know, and kind of let it rest a little bit before we started doing a whole lot of other things. And to a large degree, I think it's showing itself to have a level of success, but it's also creating some increased rigor in a lot of other ESDs, which is not a bad thing. But I'd also say one of the things I found interesting over the last few years, I mean, we talk about them being entrepreneurial, and to a degree they are, and one of the nice things about this system is that it allows them to be nimble. Last session, Willamette ESD came up with a concept of a way we could get more speech pathologists into the state at very low cost. And I'm not sure ODE would have been nimble enough to do something like that. So there can be some real positives. Now, you know, Mary's saying, you know, that's the first I'd heard about, and I'd like to talk to you about that. So, you know, I'm not quite willing at this point to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, we came into 2005 with some real horror stories, you know, having to do with airplanes and things like that. So, yeah, you know, so, but, you know, you can go into any enterprise in the scope and you're going to find bad things. And by the way, in 2005, I drew the perfect map for redesigning ESDs. It was absolutely beautiful. And
how'd that work out?
Worked out really well. I still have it. And you know, but we decided at that point in time not to do it because we're you know, part of our thought process was, because most DSD boards are elected by the public, and part of our thought process behind the new governance model was ESDs don't actually serve the public, they serve the schools. And so that's where the representation should be. And I clearly would have, in my map, that all of the small, very remote ESDs in the eastern part of the state would have been combined. Well, guess what? They've created a network. They still exist, but they now have a network. You know, so they're kind of morphing into that sort of model now. So there's a lot of good things we need to discuss in here, and I absolutely appreciate that. I just, our plan was that we would start being aggressively revisiting these issues 2 years from now, simply because I want some more legs under what we did, and we have other crises in education to deal with this time as well. So be more than happy to have conversations with you about this. So thank you for bringing this. The discussion is good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Appreciate it.
And committee, we will be seeing more legislation on ESDs. I know that, and dare I say ESD reform. So, close public hearing on Senate Bill 553. and open up a work session on Senate Bill 428. It's a Senator Metzger's bill that adds the Treasurer or Secretary of State or their designees to the State Board as non-voting members. We held a public hearing, heard from the Secretary of State, Senator Metzger, a week ago. And Senator Metzger, did you have anything to add to that?
No, nope. I just
nothing
appreciate
has changed
the
in the landscape in the last week that would...
Nope.
Okay. Senator Morris?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 428 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 428 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Senator Bonamici?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to applaud Senator Metzger for bringing this forward, and I've been a proponent of increased attention to civics and financial literacy in education, and I believe that having the voices of the Treasurer or his designee and the Secretary of State or her designee on the board input, and they mentioned in the hearing that those were areas of concern to them. So I'm proud to support this bill, and I thank Senator Metzger for bringing this forward, and I hope we see increased attention to civics and financial literacy as a result of this and other efforts that are underway. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, any objections to passing Senate Bill 428 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation? Seeing none, so ordered. Measure passes. Senator Metzger will be the carrier.
Thank you.
Open up a public hearing open up a work session on Senate Bill 44. Senators, this is the newly amended kindergarten compromise, if you will. I'm not intending to vote on it here, but I did want you to see what is known as the dash fives. Dana, if you want to go over dash fives.
So the dash fives carry forward the measure in its entirety, so the status quo would be extended through 2011-2012. The first section of the dash fives would establish the full-day kindergarten implementation committee that would aid and advise the legislature, school districts, and public charter schools to develop and provide full-day kindergarten. The committee would be appointed by the superintendent and staffed by the Department of Education, would include ex officio legislators. The charge to the committee would be to provide resources on capital needs, enrollment trends, funding requirements, and best practices. Section 4 would require the committee to submit a report and propose legislation containing a method for funding full-day kindergarten no later than the report and legislation would be due no later than October 1st, 2010. Those mechanisms for funding could include the phased-in model that we discussed at one point, but it does limit the committee to considering only full-day kindergarten implementation issues and none other. It sunsets the committee in January 2014 and declares an emergency would be effective upon passage.
Senators, this obviously doesn't go as far as what the superintendent would like, what Senator Monroe would like, what I would like, given the reality of our budget. I think, though, it does push the ball downfield a little bit. I think it goes further than the standard task force and report back to the legislature. And in polling you and some of the members of the education community, I think there's general buy-off that this in some ways is, because of the budget, presents an opportunity to look at some of the real costs and look at capacity issues. It's kind of a, you know, an opportunity for us to use this as budget jujitsu, if you will, because since we can't do it this biennium, we can take that time to look at some of those things. And the costs are frankly pretty hard on this one because we've heard that space isn't an issue in smaller schools. It is an issue in some schools, but don't worry about that. About a third of the schools are already doing full-day kindergarten mm-hmm. with a combination of tuition and federal funds. It's hard to say what the real costs would be, and there may be some unknowns and some unintended consequences here. So, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for your willingness to work on this, and I think I think this is a good approach. I'm you need to be complimented on that. It does give us a date certain. Mm-hmm. So the question no longer is if, it is how, and it's not if and when, it's how. And so we will get there. And I truly appreciate your efforts on this. I would say that one other piece, and I'll steal Senator Metzger's thunder a little bit here, is because he did mention those who currently are doing full day, a lot of those who are doing it with the School Improvement Fund. Mm-hmm. And so I think the necessity of keeping that fund separate and distinct as we go forward in the session is critical, so those schools that have used those funds for that purpose can continue to do that. So hope that was okay, Senator.
That was just fine. Could have said it better myself.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that this -5 amendment that you said you're not planning to move today,
right?
Is that correct? Maintains the existing part of Senate Bill 44, which is the extension of the 2008 bill, which I voted against. And I voted against it because I do not believe that families should be paying for public education. I'm very concerned about the inequity involved in that, and I understand that low-income families are able to get some help, and I appreciate that, but public education should be public education. And it was one of those symbolic votes because I knew that it had to be done. I knew it was going to pass even without my vote, but I might have even filed the vote explanation at the time. I probably will vote for this, but I want to make it perfectly clear that I don't like families paying for public education, and I think we need to try hard as a state to find a way. If we're making the policy decision to implement full-day kindergarten, we need to find a way to pay for it. That isn't going to take away from all of the other students in the other grades. So I wanted to make that clear that I have a philosophical opposition to people paying for public school. That's what they do when they pay their taxes. So I wanted to say that on the record and look forward to further discussion about this. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just make a quick comment. I appreciate what you've done as well, and happy to support it. I know your passion for this, and I know this isn't how you would design it. In this building, we all look at the realities of things and try to move the ball forward. So I really appreciate what you've done, and I think this, as Senator Cruzman, absolutely does that. Personally, I prefer your original approach and a confirmation of what Mr. Rose did in terms of the phase-in. Even if it was later, because it would require the legislature to actually have to take that away in order to keep it from happening. And in this process, sometimes if you put it out there and it's there, somehow it has a way of getting done. But I also understand how this whole thing works, and this makes it better. And I really appreciate what you've done. Happy to support it. And, hopefully that it will result when everyone comes in 2011, into a plan that's adopted that actually, as you mentioned, gets us where we need to be with this.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll let this breathe for a...
Can I ask a question, Mr. Chair? Do you or does anyone on the committee know if the quality education model level of funding includes full-day kindergarten? It does? Okay. I see nodding heads.
Nodding.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, close work session on... Senate Bill 44, and while we're gaveling here, I would request unanimous consent to suspend the rules in order for Senator Cruz to vote on SC3.
Does he have a good excuse, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, I was working on a bill with Senators Morissette and Bates.
Senator Cruz, how do you vote?
Cruz votes aye.
He's working on the tobacco thing.
Yeah. You hear that, Rupert? All right, and open up a work session for a purpose. We don't have any more committee bills to introduce. Oh, okay. I saw that on there. That was just possible. Okay.
They may still pop up.
They may pop up.
They may pop out, pop up, and out.
With that, we are adjourned.